Hello and welcome to House Einstein, podcast 34. It is early February 2024, week 6 of the year, and we really appreciate you joining us. I'm Osman with House Einstein, a real estate brokerage in Colorado. We are based in Boulder and Denver, and we also do business into the Front Range. And with me is Hamish Crabb.
Hello, hello. I'm Hamish Crabb. I help keep the brokerage running smoothly, assist with deals, marketing, and the podcast.
Our mission at House Einstein is to help you make a smarter real estate decision, and that's the point of the podcast as well. But a little disclaimer before we get started to keep our attorneys happy, and that is this podcast is entertainment only, should be taken as entertainment, not religious, spiritual, financial, or investment advice, or real estate advice. If you are a client of House Einstein, please reach out to your agent at the company whose job it is to advise you. Don't rely on this podcast for advice. If you are looking for representation, you can find us at houseeinstein.com. That's the best way to learn about us and also the best way to sign up for our newsletter. It's free. It has to be in a newsletter format because we talk about active listings, and that's the only place we can talk about active listings. We can talk about sold property, which we will do on this podcast, some of the recent sales here in Boulder, but we can't talk about listings that are currently on the market except in that newsletter, or if you are a client and want to reach out to us privately via email, text message, smoke signal, WhatsApp, Signal, you name it. I've got messages coming in from clients who are our priority and always will be.
Absolutely.
Let's go through our topics. What do you say?
I'm with it. I'm on board.
You had something to, say.
No, I didn't have anything.
Okay. All right. We'll run through these topics really quick so you know what to expect in this podcast. And if you're listening to it on a platform that allows chapters, you can skip around a little bit. And that's the only reason we want you to know what to expect from this podcast. So we're going to talk about market conditions. That's because data is now stable enough for it to be reliable. I usually don't comment about the market until we've been at least a week into the following month because data from the preceding month continues to change as realtors update the MLS. But at this point, we're 8 days into February, so it's okay to talk about market conditions. And I think some of what we found in the initial analysis will surprise you. And then we're going to talk about the sale of the week, and it's a big whale of a sale here in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give you details on that when we hit it.
It's a big
one. We're going to touch on, what were you
That's
saying,
all.
Hamish?
Just, it's a big one.
it is a big one. It's a big number and a sale that's a listing that's been around for a while too. So there's some interesting insights into marketing strategy that are worth discussing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll talk about some of the stuff in the news, including the commercial crash that's underway, some of the predictions that you see out there, and then some of our I guess I would call them colleagues that are producing content and advising people on real estate decisions, both at a national level as well as people here in the Denver market. So I want to talk about that a little bit. And then there's one last piece of information about a recent court action, litigation with an association and a neighbor. Then to move on with the podcast, we're going to talk about a segment of the podcast I like to call "Tell Me Something I Don't Know," and this is now maybe the fifth or sixth edition of "Tell Me Something I Don't Know." And for those of you who aren't familiar with where is that coming from, it's from the movie Wall Street, and there's a scene in that movie, and I may be misremembering it, but because I was quite young when I first saw it, but it's when Gordon Gekko wants to get insider information, and that way he can trade on it, and this young, smart analyst is our protagonist, and he is sharing all sorts of analysis, but none of it is actionable, none of it is actually useful. The market's already price that in. So Gordon, who's really kind of a villain, says, "Tell me something I don't know," which is such a great line the way he delivers it. Anyway, that's how it's in my head. So we're going to talk about something you may not know if you're thinking about buying real estate here in Boulder. And we'll go into that in some detail. And then we're going to wrap it all up with a tale from the trenches, which is our last segment, a tale from the actual business of helping buyers and sellers that I think might be useful for you if you are thinking about buying or selling, or also if you happen to be an agent listening. We know we have quite a few of those fans as well, and happy to act as a resource and education platform for you. That's a hidden audience of ours that we're always happy to engage with our colleagues on that. So that's our topics today.
Pretty solid day. I'm pretty stoked. I think we'll 90 minutes is our goal.
I think we're going to be faster than 90 minutes. I do not think that it's going to go that long. Our title, our working title for this is going to be called Smaller Pockets for this podcast. Not sure if that'll make it to the final cut, but that's our working title.
It'll become clear as we jump in. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll become clear. Maybe we'll change the title. I just think that that's a little poke at one of our large competitors in the space for your attention when it comes to real estate. And we'll talk more about that when we get to that segment.
That's right.
Okay, let's talk about market conditions. So the data is fresh. This is today's analysis. Actually, I did it at 6 a.m. when I first woke up this morning. I'm like, okay, it's the 8th. Let's look at what the data says. And I focused on single family houses. So this does not apply to townhomes and condos. And let's start with Boulder County. So 47% more single family houses went under contract last month than a year ago. That's a huge uptick. 38% more sales volume and 42% more new listings. So we're seeing both more sales and more new listings and a much higher percentage of homes going under contract and also going under contract very quickly. I don't have that data point here in that little snippet, but for sure, anecdotally, we're hearing lots and lots of stories of bidding wars are back. Here's the thing, it doesn't necessarily apply everywhere. Let's talk about Denver. In Denver, there was only a 4% rise in pending single-family sales. So those are listings that went under contract last month. And sales volume was only up 1%. But new listings shot up 23%. So Boulder County is leading quite a bit compared to Denver. The Denver market is still kind of trudging along. I think that it's going to get the message in February this month. But Boulder really woke up last month. Now, let me add a couple of caveats here. This is not specific to Louisville, Lafayette, Superior, Broomfield, Longmont, Lyons, or your subdivision, or your neighborhood in the subdivision, your cul-de-sac, down to the street level, market conditions vary. And so if you're actually thinking about buying or selling a home, you really want to get granular on the real estate situation, the real estate metrics specific to your situation, because it's irrelevant looking at all of Boulder County. But as a whole, yeah. Boulder County had a dramatic wake up. Now, if you go to our Instagram, my Instagram, personal Instagram, or Twitter, I guess it's X now. If you go to my X, I don't like calling it my X. If you go to X, you will see a tweet this morning where I posted sales volume charts of both Boulder and Denver, Boulder County and Denver. Oh, no. I did Boulder County and the city of Boulder. And as it turned out, even though there's this huge pop in activity year over year, January 2023 compared to this past January, on average, it's right in the middle. It is just within a couple of sales of the actual average for the last 3 months. Sorry, the last 3 years. January of the last 3 years, 2021, 22, and 23. Take the average of that, and last month was right on the money for the average. So even though there's a lot of realtors that are jumping up and down and telling you how amazing the market's awake, it's on fire, it is, but it also is the average of the last 3 years, and last year was really slow. So keep that in mind. The market's waking up, but I like to see a couple of months of high I like to see a trend, okay, especially with small sample sizes. Boulder County, and I know you got something to say, Hamish, and I'll let you jump in, but Boulder County is large enough. The city of Boulder is a little bit smaller, and Denver is large enough, but I still feel like I don't like statistics that lie. I want to see a trend, but January was a pretty strong showing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say it's not jumping out of bed. It's more coming out of hibernation, rubbing its eyes, slowly trundling out of bed more than anything. But it's in step with the average, which isn't a bad sign by any means so far.
It's a good sign that there's a lot more options for buyers. It's a good sign for sellers. So there's good news for both. For the buyers, there's more selection. For the sellers, the market is not quite so sluggish as it was last year at the beginning of the year. For buyers that have been hoping and praying for a huge downturn in prices, I'm sorry, there's nothing to support that's going to happen any further. The market has already dropped dramatically from the peak of March, April, and May 2022. That was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And listings from that period, people that bought in that period are often trying to recoup what they paid for their houses. So don't be surprised to see overpriced listings. But it's really important to know the difference. And it's really important to price your listing right to begin with. If you bought your house 2 years ago in a bidding war and you grossly overpaid any sense of what it should have been bought for, you paid way too much, and there's one of those I like to talk about in Boulder, we don't need to mention it again, you're not going to sell that house for anywhere close to what you paid for it. And that, I think they're now like 150 or something below what they bought it for, and they still are going to slide down because
that listing is still up.
Yeah. Ugh. It's we won't embarrass that sell. It's an active listing, yeah. So we can't talk about it on this podcast any further. But they paid so much more than it just made no sense when it closed that my brain might just exploded. I'm like, wow, hundreds of thousands over list, and it was priced right.
Yeah.
Somebody had to have that house, and now they're less than a year later, they tried to start selling it. They started listing it, and it's still sitting, and it's still dropping. I think it has more to go.
Jeez.
But we won't talk anymore because that would reveal the address.
That's that.
And that's enough. Let's stop. So that's market conditions. And the good news is you have more selection if you're a buyer. And if you're a seller and you price it right and market it well, you have a much higher chance of getting your home sold relatively quickly. And be careful believing in agents that tell you they can do listing takeovers and all the rest of that, because a lot of that is timing. A lot of that is the first listing agent grossly overpriced the property. And it sat for a very long time, so now it looks stale. And the new agent comes in, and they come in with fresh marketing, professional videography. They make sure they distribute the marketing across social media. And now it sells very quickly because we're in the spring of the year. So don't be surprised to see that sort of stuff coming out of listing agents. It's not necessarily the agent, although if they're mm-hmm. competent, that makes up the difference between competency and incompetent agents.
Yeah, I don't actually have anything to add. You kind of nailed that one. I'd love to throw a little on there, but yeah.
Look, a lot of listing agents, including ourselves, got caught in the downdraft of last year's rapid decrease in prices at the second half of the year. And we saw some very competent agents here in Boulder take $1 million off their original list price.
We even talked about it.
Yeah. And so... I'd like you to think carefully and read through or see through some of the marketing fluff that you get from some listing agents. And there's a lot of marketing fluff, a lot of, frankly, BS that you'll see out there. Okie dokie.
Well, speaking of listings.
Okay, so let's talk about the listing of the week. But the last thing I want to mention is that there'll be a little bit more data analysis in the February Fresh Listings newsletter. I started writing it. My guess is it'll be done before the end of the weekend, and we should have it out early part of next week. So you have time to sign up for the newsletter, and you'll find it at houseeinstein.com. Okay.
Nailed it.
Sale of the week. This property is in a neighborhood called Trailhead. So if you're familiar with Boulder, the most popular hiking trail in Boulder is called Sanitas. And it's really a couple of trails. Mount Sanitas is the area, and you can hike to it right from downtown. Mapleton Hill butts up right up against this. And a few years ago, developers began the Trailhead neighborhood. It's not that large, maybe a dozen or so homes. I have to actually count. It could be a little bit larger than that, but we're not talking about a lot of homes in this little pocket neighborhood. But they're all brand new and beautifully designed. So the lots were sold. The owners hired their own architects and built, frankly, stunning homes. And the most desirable of the homes in the Trailhead neighborhood are the ones that actually backed the open space. So the far west side of that little neighborhood is the most desirable. And the larger lots, of course, are more desirable. And there's been a listing on the market for quite a while. So this, we're talking about 2621 3rd Street, which just sold for 8.7. And it's when you look at the spectrum of sales in the city of Boulder, 8.7 is near the top mm-hmm. of Boulder's market. There are listings that are more. The Spider House, for example, that's on Lee Hill, is listed for more. They're coming down in price, and that's a super attractive property for a whole bunch of other reasons. But this particular property is one of these many that have been completely new homes built within the last decade or so. And the west side, of course, is the most attractive. But the listing was hit the market in May of last year. And this is one of those situations with a very long listing period. So let's count the months. May through February is 9 months to get this home sold. And during that 9 month period, there were no reductions in the list price. And it took 110 days before a buyer actually locked it down. So the market had an opportunity to look at this property for 3 full months before a buyer negotiated and was able to lock it down. And it just closed for 8.7, which is only 75,000 below list. So this is one of those circumstances with, in my opinion, a seller who knew what they had. And they were not desperate to sell. It's probably one of many assets in their investment portfolio. It's a home that they probably lived in and utilized and enjoyed, maybe a second home, likely a second home. And they knew the value. And the listing agent knew the value. There were no reductions, zero, in the list price during that period. And now that it's closed at this, you know, trivial discount, $75,000 is really just symbolic. Like,
especially at this price point.
Yeah, as a percentage. I mean, you could do this while I'm talking, Hamish, but it's a fraction, right? It's so small of a discount. It's what I like to call a token discount. Like, we know what we got. We know that you'll feel better if we give you something. So we'll knock $75,000 off the list price and call it good. Now, you won't find this listing for very long or in very many places because it has been removed from syndication and the majority of photographs have also been removed. So you won't find it on Zillow. You won't find it on Realtor.com or any of the other websites that most people typically shop at. But you will find it on the listing agent's website for now. And you can see a little video that she has on the home, and you can see some of the details of the home. It's Hamish, what do you think of the video? What is your take on the video?
I think the video is fairly decent. Listing videos in general, there's a tendency to move towards, you have these kind of pretty gorgeous shots. The architecture is amazing, so it's fairly easy to highlight. But then when you watch it, especially from kind of like a more content creator standpoint, it, and I'm guilty of it too, begins to turn into just a slideshow of video clips. It's still not really pulling you through the home or necessarily like taking advantage of some more techniques that might pull your attention into it a little bit further. So it's very nice, and it gets the point across that the house is gorgeous, and I think it fulfills that, but there is for sure some room to create a little bit more story out of it. Maybe pull some more emotional energy out of you while you're watching it. But it fulfills the requirement as much as I'd assume the requirement needs to be fulfilled here. It got the price.
Well, I'm going to say, Hamish, that was your expert opinion, and it's invaluable because most people are going to say that listing video is just fine. Mm-hmm. It's got three-axis gimbal shots. There's some drone shots. But you're right. It's just a slideshow. There's no story. There's also no marketing of downtown. Now, let me back up one more step, and that is we like this listing agent. She's mm-hmm. competent. She does good work. I'm not throwing her under the bus. We're just talking about the marketing. And if mm-hmm. we had done it, we also would have featured –
and a lot of these shots I would have gotten, you know?
Yeah, you would have got – the house shots are fine, but there should have been some shots of hiking. There should have been some shots of downtown. And frankly, there should be some narration at the beginning with the agent saying, look, come check out this amazing house. Here's why it's so important. Here's why it makes so much sense. Or here's why this is one of the most gorgeous homes in the city of Boulder, mm-hmm. which is all true. But you have to just infer that by looking at the video. But and it only got, you know, a handful of views, like under 100 because it wasn't pushed through social media. You have to – I mean, when we do, so we're doing this for every one of our listings, mm-hmm. and we're also not just shooting it professionally, but we are
boosting it.
We are paying to advertise it for however long it's on the market. And it's really important to do that if you want eyeballs to see it. Like 10x, the number of eyeballs should be expected. And I mean, for example, how many views did we eventually end up with on our South Peak listing?
South Peak is at like 15,000.
Yeah, 15,000 versus under 100. So
further into that too, we make sure that it's local. So we check, select counties and municipalities across the Front Range. We're making sure that it's localized that are seeing it, and it's going to be fed back into the listing.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, even an $8.7 million home doesn't have a national advertising budget. But it should be pushed at least locally. Mm-hmm. And so that's the story of this listing. I thought it's an amazing house, and the takeaways are the seller and their agent were right to not reduce the price, to just wait. And sure enough, they found a buyer 3 months into the deal. There's a really weird time period. So it went under contract in September. And then it switched to active backup, which meant they have an offer, but they're willing to look at backup offers. And then in December, it switched to pending, which meant we're done with backups. And in a deal environment, before you switch it to pending, you better be confident you're approaching closing, right? Or you really don't want the home shown anymore. You don't really feel the need to have people tromping through your listing, your private home, who may or may not be serious buyers. So that's when you switch it to pending.
And you're happy. And that's how the market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you think you're ABC, all but closed, and you think you're headed to closing. You have high probability. It's always the seller's choice, by the way, when we switch status. But that is a topic to talk about with your client. And then, the home itself, a large lot, far west side of Trailhead, a gorgeous home, post and beam interior, which is one of my favorite interior styles. And honestly, it's a home that reminds me of when I used to work in real estate on Nantucket. And that is a model for development or building a home or designing a home that was always about being understated on the outside and being very tasteful and elegant and well-designed with very high-end fixtures and finishes on the inside. Like, the interior architecture often wows you much more than the outside, but none of it is ostentatious. Mm-hmm. And at least with Nantucket, the Nantucket model, there's a certain shake shingle look, right, that these homes all have on this historic, the whole island is a historic district. Here in Colorado, people expect more of an Aspen style look to a home at this price point. So this home would not look out of place in Aspen as well. It's like a Colorado rugged mountain look to the exterior with the choices of finishes. Mm-hmm. Stunning home, incredible sale. Congratulations to the listing agent and to the seller and to the new buyer for choosing well, because that's a fantastic location, fantastic home. A little bit privacy compromised because of the trail right behind it. That is something that you'd want to have a conversation about.
Unlike
the Spider House, the lot is so big that you get built-in privacy. But with this particular house, I think that privacy would be one of the due diligence questions. I can totally see our client. Osman, can you go hike the trail? We want to sit in the backyard. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, Hamish, how do you feel about going and hiking that trail?
I would go do it.
Whatever we need to do to make our clients happy. But that would be a due diligence question, is if you have a tall person, which Hamish and I are both pretty tall, walking on that trail above the house, can they look into the backyard? Or is it screened? Or can it be screened with, mature trees or other landscaping?
Is that smokestack still up?
I think it is. I haven't been over there in a while, and I think it actually is one of these things that are required to stay up.
It's almost a landmark.
So the whole area, it's a visual cue to the history of what went on in this part of Boulder, including a sanitarium, and now there's a assisted living facility that has been constructed there. I think they're almost done. It's been a multi-year project, a contentious one too, because it's not a affordable assisted living facility. They negotiated to not have to do that. But the community was able to negotiate access to the saltwater pool. So once it's fully up and running, any of us should be able to wander over there and get a pool pass for a couple of bucks and go for a swim.
Sweet. Yeah, and I think you hit it with it being location and you know, a very new home. Though I recall, at least on the Fresh newsletter, we've covered a few like family compounds that I think are at a lower price point than this. And I mean, maybe it's perhaps not location and this is what the buyer wanted, but this is quite a high price. I think Knollwood.
Knollwood right around the corner might have been far more private, but the homes on Knollwood, which are in unincorporated Boulder County for now, they're likely going to be accessed at some point. The homes up there are far, far more private, but much more dated and need tons of work. So this is turnkey, fully built, modern, well, modern in its design, modern in its, not modern as a style. I mean, it was built recently versus the Knollwood. Everything is pretty much ancient, decades old, and you feel it when you walk in.
Okay.
But if privacy was your priority, Knollwood makes way more sense than Trailhead.
Yeah. Gorgeous spot.
Okay. So, yeah, well, let's talk about your family compound comment really briefly. We have had property where we were on the listing side and basically understood that this property offered a huge opportunity to market it as a family compound because the lot was so big that it could be subdivided. And in order to prove it, we hired an architect who then opined about it. He also communicated with the city to verify that, yes, it was subdividable. And then once he got those numbers, he actually built a concept house, really rough sketch. I mean, this is not building plans, but enough that you could actually have built a second home on the second half of the lot, subdivide it, build the second home, and fence the entire thing in. And, you know, I guess it all depends on your priorities in life. If you're looking for that family compound option, those are here, but they're really rare, and you may have to look for a few years. That obviously was not this buyer's priority or choice.
Yeah.
Goal.
I think the buyer ended up holding on to it as more of a kind of trading card option than anything else. The buyer.
Oh, you mean the buyer of the house we're talking about? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not this house.
The family compound one. Yeah, the one you had.
I don't think that we advised our client, and we advised the buyer too, I believe, that you should subdivide this right away because the city could change its rules, and you don't really want to wait for that. But so let's talk about the lot history. So the lot was acquired for $1.13 in 2014. And it looks like there was some recording differences. I'm not entirely sure why there was. If you look at the ownership, it was re-recorded with zero cost to transfer in a quitclaim deed back to the same people that were the people selling it. So I don't really know what happened here, why they had that go on. But they built this home in 2015 is the effective year built. So it took them not that long. They acquired it in July, and they had their home built in the following year. So they lived in it for almost a decade. So it's not a flip. It's not a spec home, all of which are very favorable for what to expect when you walk in a house like this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we've analyzed it to death. Other than to say that if you're shopping for this type of property, you really want to compare it to homes not just in Trailhead, and it becomes subjective when it comes to the lot premium, like how much should you put on the value of this lot, and then the counterbalance of, well, what about the privacy issue, and does that take away from the investment value of this property or not? And ultimately, the clients, of course, make all the calls, right? We're just here to advise and coach and do research projects if these are the things they care about.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on.
I think so.
I think everyone's happy, and I think the listing agent and seller are very happy. And hopefully the buyer's happy too, because it's a stunning property. All right, let's talk about what's in the news. What's really in the news today is all about Donald Trump and the Supreme Court, but that's not our wheelhouse, nor do I want it to be.
Yeah.
Let's talk about real estate. And this week I did a little short about the real estate crash that's underway and its impact. Let's talk about it a little bit more. I really think the regional banks like First Bank and Vectra are potentially at risk. And we have no idea what's in their portfolio, how many of those loans are bad. But if you look at some of these markets around the country where sales are occurring at 25% of the original sale price of only a couple of years ago, that is shocking. Like, you know, you're buying a property at a fraction of its original, of its recent sale price. So the way these deals are capitalized, Hamish, is that you as the owner show up with 5% down, maybe not even. It's the percentage of actual ownership is usually really low, and the bank takes all the risk. Well, guess what happens if the owner can't meet the mortgage payments because the tenants aren't there? Well, the owner is going to hand the keys back to the bank, and the bank is going to say, okay, it's time to sell it. But guess what? It's a huge loss on their books, and that potentially could create a liquidity crisis for them. Although I'm not sure that the Fed facility is still available. I think it might be. So I don't think we're going to see. Remember a year ago when Silicon Valley Bank was collapsing, the Fed set up a facility to create liquidity for these regional banks. Hmm. I think that's still up. This is, again, also not my wheelhouse is what the Fed is doing. But that enabled or prevented, many would say, a wholesale crisis, particularly in the regionals, the regional banks. All right, let's bring this down to real estate here in Boulder. I think that there's a lot of partially vacant commercial real estate. And Boulder has always been a very high work from home location, but it dramatically accelerated during the pandemic. So what does that mean? I think that if you are an entrepreneur or a business owner who has targeted Boulder as where you want to relocate, or anywhere from Denver to Fort Collins, and this is region is somewhere you want to move your business, now is probably a fantastic time to aggressively shop for space and own the space. And we've seen this, you know, many times where businesses end up somewhat in trouble because they don't actually own the underlying real estate. Well, this is a great opportunity to work on acquiring the real estate for your business. That's how I look at it, because the fundamentals of what make this market attractive aren't going away. We live in an amazing place. The weather is fantastic. The worker pool is incredibly talented and educated and creative, and it is a fantastic place to live. Taxes have risen recently, particularly property taxes, but compared to many other places, we're still really cheap.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Northeast is insane, right? Mm-hmm. So as far as if you were to create a spreadsheet that said, all right, here are the top 20 most desirable places, and then sat down with your business partners, you probably would narrow it down to 5. And it's very strong. There's a very strong probability that anywhere from Denver to Boulder or Fort Collins would be on that list for a lot of reasons, including well-educated research universities, major airport hub, fantastic weather, and people who are talented and creative want to live here. So all of those things are fantastic. And as long as we don't screw all that up and turn it into California with all the exodus that's happening, I think that that our state will continue to be attractive, at least until climate change makes it less so.
Even then, we've got pretty decent odds from what I've heard. But this commercial being mostly office space, or is it kind of more retail as well? What type of space, I guess, in Boulder specifically?
It's mostly office space.
Okay.
So there's a bunch of offices around the city's center, so on the outsides of the city. Mostly on the east side, of course, because you can't really build anything on the west side. But if you were to head east on, say, Arapahoe and then take a left on 55th, on that northeast side, you'll see a whole bunch of office buildings. Also, off of Pearl Parkway, whole bunch of office buildings. And those parking lots are not packed to the gills. It's really clear that there's a lot of vacancy in those spaces. So I know Apple took a huge portfolio of properties a few years ago. In that Arapahoe 55th to the northeast of there, that location.
Mm-hmm.
That location, by the way, is also where the city has targeted massive development to occur in the future. That's where we're going to see a lot more development in the next 20 years. So, I don't know. It's an interesting time to look for distressed commercial, particularly distressed commercial office space, not retail. I don't think retail's in the trouble that office space is.
Yeah.
So this reminds me, honestly, that it reminds me of the bond market, because unlike the stock market, where the price of equities are known instantaneously, the bond market is opaque. And the trading that occurs between brokerage houses and investors, and it is completely hidden. Bond values are not publicly known instantly the way that stock market values are. And real estate, distressed real estate assets and loans sitting in these regional banks are also not known. And the banks have a real strong incentive to have them not be known and try to work things out. But I think we're reaching crisis stage. And I would not surprise me at all to see First Bank or Vectra or other decent-sized regional banks become acquisition targets for the big players like, you know, JP Morgan, Chase. Other large institutions can swoop these up. They may be waiting until they're in bankruptcy. What does that mean for you as an individual? Probably not much, other than be sure not to have your bank balances exceed the FDIC limit. But other than that, probably not much for you to worry about. But as a business owner, this is where the opportunity is. As a business leader that is looking for relocation, this is really a shining moment to start to plan to move your team here to Boulder. And if you want, by the way, us to get involved, we're happy to do so. Commercial is not my forte, and then that I know how clubby it is. And so I have a business, I have a realtor I like to partner with that I really trust. So I would bring him into the fold. But if you have a team that's looking to buy homes or sell homes in the region, can you hear me, see you? We are here for you.
Yeah.
And happy to advise your clients, or your workers, your employees.
Yeah. Right, being residential, I don't keep up on commercial too much. Though Google's got their complex, Apple's got theirs in Boulder. So, Boulder being just a generally pretty exciting city and a lot of people moving to it, some of the bigger companies, kind of makes sense. What a good opportunity, and, right?
And also the federal labs, and also CU. And the federal labs and CU are anti-recessionary.
Mm-hmm.
So, Twitter was here. I think Elon stopped paying the rent and that killed the Twitter office. I'm not sure what's going on over there, if they're still here or not, how
Twitter
that
was
settled
here?
Out. I know there was a lawsuit. Twitter did have a sales office here. And then once Elon acquired X, apparently stopped paying the mortgage. There was a lawsuit I remember reading about maybe 8 months ago. This is vague memories, by the way. I don't have this right in front of me.
Not gospel.
But talent is mobile, and so is capital. And where do they want to be? They want to be in places like the Front Range, where even though housing prices have risen, the reasons people want to live here have not changed. And even in 20 or 30 years, if climate change will continue to be a problem, residential real estate will harden. People will do more to prevent wildfires. People will do more to reduce flood risk in floodplains. When you have to compare Boulder relative to other places, it's not in isolation. Like, what are your other options 20 or 30 years from now? And I think Boulder is well positioned for the foreseeable future. But there will be a day where it could be challenging, and that is something to think about.
Mm.
But that's 20 or 30 years from now. I probably will be dead. You'll be the CEO of House Einstein Enterprises.
And, ooh.
Yeah, well, as you know, we dabble in all sorts of areas of real estate.
Yeah. No, I think that's solid take. I'm in agreement with you there, too. On the demo.
We should move on from the crash, because that's just one piece of news. And the other piece of news, I'm going to join these together, right? So this is the connection between an article you shared, which came from Bankrate with a national housing prediction, as well as the topic of this podcast, the smaller pockets. And it really stunned me, because I was kind of researching who are the top YouTubers in the real estate space, and Bigger Pockets came up as one of the leading channels. And so I watched one of the episodes, and they had some guy on as a guest who was supposedly an expert in rental properties. And they did this segment where they had this guy, and I can't remember the name of his company. It doesn't really matter. It's rental investing, right? Residential rental investing. They had this guy walk through like 20 markets and basically do hot or not. Like, should you invest here or not? And he was looking at things like the purchase price relative to potential rental income. And he just rambled through 20 markets with just, and you've heard me say, like, we're down to the neighborhood when it comes to intelligent real estate investing, down to the street.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's primary for your personal use or it's as an investment property, it is hyper local. And this guy had no problem rattling off through 20 properties and doing effectively a hot or not on it. And it just reminded me that if you were to spend some time looking at content creators in the real estate space, you get a lot of generalists. And they often have a pitch to please use our referral network, and here's a link to it. And it's free to you, which is exactly what BiggerPockets guy said. It's free to you. Sign up on our website to get a referral to an amazing agent that can help you achieve your goals. Well, that's all. So I'm not sure what their
exact status is
of the brokerage. Yeah. You need to be licensed to get referral fees. But there's a lot of referral business stuff out there that's hidden to the consumer. So I think I mentioned that before. There used to be a troubleshooter network here in Colorado. And I looked into it when I first joined. The real estate market here when I started working here, because we were trying to advertise and grow our business. And I was like, how do you end up on the Troubleshooter Network? Well, it turns out the Troubleshooter Network was 100%. You pay $2,000. It was like $2,000 a month. Jeez. And we'll put you on a list of referral partners, and you might get some leads out of that. And I was like, you know, that's like what you're pitching to the consumer is we're going to help you like choose a high quality, really, you know, solid performer for your service provider. But they did zero vetting other than if, you know, you've got some major complaint against you, they may not let you in. But they really didn't care. If you have $2,000 a month, they were happy to add you to the referral list.
So long as you're whenever you, paying in about a mortgage payment as your membership fee, well, right?
It ain't free.
No.
And it probably isn't a high quality service provider. So there's a couple of thoughts with that. One, it's very unlikely that these channel content creators or experts in their local market. And two, if you hear the word referral and sign up for something, you know what their business model is, and you're probably not going to get a actual competent service provider in the market you're looking for. It's not that easy. You have to do your own research, vet these people carefully, talk to them about how they're actually going to be boots on the ground helping you be smart about the real estate decision. There's actually a channel that I've seen pop up on my feed a few times for the Denver market. And I can't remember, it's like the Denver Property Brothers or something like that. And it's like these two bro-y guys. And they've done videos on downtown Boulder, and they've done videos on basically every city on the Front Range. And here's what you need to know about buying in Boulder. And you know, they've got footage, drone shots, and then these two bro-y guys with their hats on backwards kind of walking you through what you need to know. And call us and we'll hook you up with an agent. Oh, that's all referral marketing, and they are licensed, so they can earn a 20-25% referral fee, but they don't do business here.
Yeah,
like they basically, right? Like that's the thing, is that they actually don't know anything about the local market because they don't participate in this local market.
There's
the way that a local provider does.
You know? While I was searching for topics on this podcast, I came across another one, which was like an investment review of Boulder real estate market. And you know, a few show notes ago, you were checking the sources and seeing where I found these. So I was like, I'll do that ahead of time. And it was some random guy in Florida who had, I mean, maybe I'll call it 20% was good, plausible AI. The rest of it was generally some decent statistics, and the info wasn't necessarily incorrect, but it was all high level, right? Not down to the street, none of the specifics that we were talking about. And it's a guy in Florida. And I was like, oh, this is totally one of those referral networks. And same thing, we looked into him briefly, and it does look like there's some multiple states involved. But Sirhunt, he's got the reach out and get on the network, and we'll figure something
100%.
out. 100%. Yeah.
Right. We went down the rabbit hole for what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And his referral partners that are part of, you know, he's using his celebrity to create referrals.
Yeah.
And you have no idea if who you're getting is competent or not. But he's good looking and well spoken and produces great videos. So I hope you get what you, sometimes yeah. in life you get what you pay for, but sometimes you don't get what you paid for. So be ye, what's the word? Caveat emptor.
It's a good way to put it. You know, Hamish,
digging into the sources is really important. Like you shared this Resi Club analytics link, which we'll put into the show notes, looking at office conversions.
Mm-hmm.
And my first question, so I scanned the article, and they've got some pretty charts. I like the charts that show the pipeline of office to apartment conversions in 20 plus cities, and they've got a source for it. So they've actually, you know, it passes the initial sniff test. They tell you who created the table, The source is something called Rent Cafe. I don't know if any of this is accurate, but the amount of time it would take to actually assemble each of these cities, you would have to talk to their planning department and do a calculation of how many units are planned each year, right, in this Rent Cafe link, to come up with this. And the economic incentive to do all that research, I used to do research for an investment bank, and they paid me a lot, and we didn't give it away for free. So how are they getting this? Like, I've got lots of questions, but especially knowing how difficult it is to convert an office to an apartment building, I've got lots and lots of questions. But they did put Denver, by the way, on this chart, and it says there's 902 office to apartment units that will be converted. So there's 902
plans
units
still,
that
right? Will be like, not even
planned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just planned one right now, Hamish. Right there.
Yeah, exactly. No, I plan to make probably $5 million this year. Because
I
planned it.
I'm assuming that they got this data by filing a permit, but sometimes what you see online just doesn't pass the sniff test. And this Resi Club thing might be accurate or not. At least the charts are pretty. If I really was investing on the basis of this, I'd want to do my own research. And of course, you don't invest in 20 markets, you invest in one. And the real research is how hard is it to convert an apartment to a housing building, to a housing development, to apartments. How easy is it to convert an office to apartments is really the question. And my understanding is it's really hard, so.
Yeah, the windows tend to stay around the outside of the building. Skyscrapers.
Right. And people are willing to work in cubes, but they're not willing to buy an apartment that doesn't have I don't even know if you legally can have. It has to have fire escape. So I don't know how that works.
It makes.
And a lot of other things.
I mean, from the very high level, it makes sense. We have this empty building space. We need houses. Why not? But there's a lot of the. It's not caveats. A lot of the details that have yet to be figured out or proven.
The more you know about how hard it is to convert an apartment building to residential, the less likely the numbers are going to work out when you start doing that math. Even back of the envelope, I think this is an architect's job is to walk you through this, a planner's job to walk you through this. But knowing what we know, this is not our area of expertise, it just stuns me that there's any. Like, it's a tiny number that would be possible to convert. It's something you see on a Reddit forum by somebody who's like, oh, no one's thought of this. Let me come up with this brilliant idea and share it to everyone. And if you are able to buy these assets at a quarter of their value 5 years ago or 3 years ago, maybe the economics pencil out. But I have a hard time believing it.
Yeah.
So my takeaway from that is when you see content online, ask questions. Don't assume just because someone's sharing a chart that it's accurate. Ask how they came up with it. Ask where the data came from. Ask their skill set in actually analyzing the data. And when a residential realtor shares data, it's full of caveats, you know, especially if they're talking about how impressive their brokerage is. Compass is number one. Yep. Compass might be number one, but you got your license last week.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't mean anything. And people slight these realtors who claim they're the number one realtor in Boulder and have been for the last 20 years. Number one how? Like, number one in volume, number one in because you claim you're number one. Like, you see that stuff all the time.
I've been claiming myself as number one for 20 years, and because I've been claiming myself as number one, I'm number one in that. Yeah, that didn't land.
I hope I'm number one for my wife, but I may not be. I don't know.
Oh, man.
I hope I'm not. Number one for some people, but probably not. I'm just not that important.
And
okay, so let's
really quick. Just a final caveat is invest in what you know, or the areas that you know, or the industry that you know. And if you don't, really vet whoever you're taking your advice from. Not just an article. Get more. Go deeper. Check and then triple check.
Yeah, I mean, taking a pile of money and sprinkling it across the whole country with residential realtors and hoping that you're going to do well as an income property investor is a fool's pipe. It's just a bad choice. So the maxim you shared is one I share with people. It's one I heard from one of my mentors, and that's invest in what you know and make sure you know it well. And my sense of these content creators is they just want your eyeballs, and then they can turn it into cash money through referral networks and other means that downgrade your performance the likely performance of your chosen service provider, your realtor. Mm-hmm. You're likely not going to get a high quality person through one of these referral networks.
Yeah. From a stand,
I'll tell you, I'm not going to pay $2,000 a month, and I'm not going to pay the Denver Bros 25% for a lead. Absolutely not.
No.
Zero chance.
And from a content perspective, what they're doing, all their referral networks and all their links outside of the video, it's decent enough high level, right? But even initially, we're like, we want neighborhood level, we want street level, we want more nuance than what they're providing.
There's a reason we're doing neighborhood by neighborhood mm-hmm. in our content. We're not doing all of Boulder.
Yeah.
We're even like, you know, we're doing neighborhood by neighborhood because that's as granular as I feel like is it actually value add.
When it comes down
any
to
higher
it.
Level.
Yeah.
It's not valuable information for real buyers and sellers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might like the talent. They might resonate with you. They might be attractive. You might feel like these guys get it or this person gets it. But I would strongly encourage deeper and deeper due diligence.
It's almost like that's our mission or our motto or something like that. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You might think that's something we care about here.
Okay. This final right, one.
Yeah. Let's hit the final one.
It's okay. Behind a paywall. So this one's all you, Oz. You've got the paywall.
Oh, it's in the Daily Camera paywall. All right. Well, you can at least show a screenshot right now, or I'll share it with
I'll
you
make
afterwards
a note to grab
so you
it
can see
me.
It. So this is in this week's Daily Camera, and the Daily Camera, well, sometimes they have good articles. We're not going to attack the Daily Camera. But I've got, you know, there are some times I wonder about the Daily Camera. But Iris Hollow is a neighborhood that sits at the intersection of Iris and 28th Street. It is tucked behind the Safeway up there, and it's right up against the bike path. I have done transactions on the buy and sell side in that neighborhood, and one of the dominant features is the children's preschool, which is not part of the HOA, but has been there for a long time. It's a really cute little red house, and it's a centerpiece in the neighborhood. Apparently, the Association for Iris Hollow had negotiated to allow the children's preschool to utilize the playground, and that deal has fallen apart after after what, 20 years or something like that they've been playing together, and suddenly it's no longer working. And so it's in the Daily Camera, and Hamish, you'll throw that screenshot on, but the mm-hmm. takeaway from this is that HOAs are and I happen to know some things about this particular HOA because of our seller, who shared some things with me. HOAs can be well-managed or more likely are badly managed. And allowing something like this to get to litigation stage is evidence, in my opinion, of really bad management, a massive distraction for the association. Pending litigation can also hold up all transactions. Lenders may not lend if there's pending litigation. So all sorts of things are problematic when your association is in a lawsuit. And having represented buyers and sellers, I've lost count of how many times where associations have been problematic. It's just really important to ask your agent, if you're on the buy side and on the sell side, is if you really dotted the I's and crossed the T's when mm-hmm. it comes to the association. On the sell side, it's pretty easy. You provide the association docs. Make sure they have access to all of them, because if you didn't give them access to minutes and there's discussion over lawsuits, well, there's a case there that they didn't get all their info. But if you're on the buy side, you should be looking for deferred maintenance at the first showing. You should be talking to the neighbors once you're under contract. And you should be reading through the minutes and the financial statements. Your realtor is almost certainly not qualified to give you an opinion on any of that. And I'll say the same thing, even though I will look at the association docs for our clients. And if there's something that's obviously wrong, like no reserve study and yet lots of discussion over all the expenses coming due and the special assessments, and we haven't talked about any of that, none of that's been disclosed, and I see it, I'll bring it up. Because you're joining a financial club.
Yeah.
That's the way to think about associations. It's like being married to somebody who has, you know, tons of credit card debt and student loan debt and no job prospects and a heroin habit. That's what's going on with associations. You need to know this before you put a ring on the finger.
What gets me at this point is how much negative press are HOAs getting, and there's still HOAs that aren't figuring it out and getting their head together and doing their job. You know, it's crazy. I really want to kind of... The HOAs, for the most part, can't really be dissolved either. Once it's put together, it's pretty much there.
Yeah. Watch John Oliver's Daily Show. I think it's like an hour-long episode on associations, mm-hmm. and it is mind-blowing. He does a much better job and far more entertaining than we'll ever be talking about how messed up associations are. But for buyers, this is simple, okay, to start. Your due diligence starts at the first showing, and you should be looking for signs of deferred maintenance. And if you see lots of deferred maintenance, it's a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
Because it means the HOA is being mismanaged. They're not taking care of the most visible and obvious issues with the property. And it doesn't matter how old the association is. If it's starting to look run down, they're not reserving properly or managing properly. And these, especially the smaller ones, can be little fiefdoms for the association directors, presidents of the association. They could be the president for 20 years and use the association any way they wish to benefit their ego or their pocket.
For their own gain.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So sometimes the cracks show up and they're in the daily camera. And that's the story with this HOA is this lawsuit. So check it out if you happen to have daily camera access. Our next topic du jour, and we're almost done, is tell me something I don't know. And this, I think, is timely because we're about to move into the snowiest time of year for Boulder and for Denver, for the whole Front Range. And that is a little bit about our climate.
Yeah. So, I mean, last weekend we had, I'm happy to call it, that was the, for driving conditions, that was the worst snowstorm I've been a part of. And I've been here, I think, going on 8 or 9 years now. I moved in 2013. I've been driving since 2015, and that was the worst I've ever been in. So that was, yeah. Just more often, this segment's really angled towards listeners who aren't from a snowy climate and imagine, you know, it's going to be fairly easy. One of the biggest things, and I want to hit this one first because it drives me nuts, is all-season tires being adequate. No. I mean,
get snow tires. Yeah. All season tires are also called no season tires. Get snow tires for the winter, especially if you want to have any chance of going up and down into the mountains for ski season.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you want to be safe driving around with your family, because those without snow tires can be barreling across 287 at 80 miles an hour at you because they're hydroplaning across the snow and you have a millisecond to react.
Yep.
And in that moment, the difference in braking speed, turning ability, is life or death. And so 100%, here's what you don't know if you're moving here.
Mm-hmm.
Boulder is horrible at snow removal. Like, has a reputation for being horrible. Boulder also has a map that they will publish, that is published, it's available, that shows you what their plow routes are mm-hmm. and what their priority areas are.
Potential due diligence.
And just because your street is steep doesn't mean you get plow service. One of our clients, who I'll actually talk about in a bit, I think we missed this on due diligence for him when he bought 15 years ago, says he could put out lawn chairs and on a snowy day and have some drinks and just watch the cars crash because this is one car after another that goes skidding sideways down the hill into another car. It is really, really bad. And he's prepared. He has snow tires. Mm-hmm. So this is just everyone else is the problem. So snow
tires. I mean, like, cities will plow. And whether or not they're great at it or bad at it, kind of, it helps. But it's a little bit beside the point. If you need to be somewhere, if you want to get somewhere, right? Like, you kind of need that to be able to get out there. And cities will always favor the main roads first. Your neighborhood streets might get missed. Mine were in the last snowstorm, but they were got in the little snows we've had previous. And it's just one of those, it's nice to have good plowing, but you got to be ready on your own too.
Well,
go ahead.
When I first moved here, Hamish, over 20 years ago, my frame of reference was upstate New York. And upstate New York plows, and upstate New York salts. And all of New York, as far as I knew growing up, does that, okay? It is taken care of. Here in Colorado, the powder dump usually melts within a couple of days because it's warm again. And the inner streets of the city are not plowed, are not salted. You're just trucking through. And if we happen to get a storm that that doesn't have sun after it and warmer temperatures, all that gets packed down and potholed, and it's an icy disaster. But you as a homeowner, at least here in the city of Boulder and most cities in Colorado, are required to shovel your sidewalk within 24 hours of the storm ending. But the city ain't required to do jack, and they don't do jack. And so expect, this is one of these things you don't know moving here, is that winter, even if you're not in the mountains like where I live, you are subject to really bad travel conditions on foot, on bicycle, or in a car after it snows. And the smart thing, just like you're wearing snow boots with some traction, or you're putting micro spikes on if you're hiking the trails that get packed down, studded high-quality snow tires, or the ones like Blizzax that have the micro cell.
Blizzax are wicked.
Stick to the ice. This is what you want, and you want to be safe, not just can I get by is usually the can I get by with all seasons. You can,
and then you have those people, you know, I have all-wheel drive, all I need is all season. You have all-wheel drive, you don't have all-wheel stop, you know, like you still need that rubber compound that grips ice and snow in order to stop effectively, and that's where you get most of your issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with the sentiment entirely. Although I've heard that phrase, but if you think about it, Hamish,
I mean,
most cars have four brakes.
Yeah, I know. Okay? It's got some holes in it.
But most cars don't have all-wheel steering, and even so, it's just you can't beat the laws of physics because you have all-wheel drive and snow tires, but you certainly have a much bigger safety margin.
Yeah.
And some communities are far, far worse than others, and Boulder is one of the worst. Anecdotally, in its snow removal. And I'm not giving the crew sass. The people that are doing the work are working their tail off. But the resources that have been dedicated to snow removal are just sad compared to what you'd expect if you moved here from the Northeast. You will be surprised at how bad the roads here are in winter. And that is something to think about also in your home selection. You may want to review the map and see what sort of snow plowing you get. If you're on a school route, you'll probably get plowed. If you're not...
And that's something, I didn't have that frame of reference coming over, so I don't really know how it is in the Northeast. So that's good to know, because I'm kind of like, oh, we get dealt with the hand we get. I'll say sometimes, too, it feels like the cities get caught off guard. And I'll get caught off guard. I thought last weekend was going to be probably like 2 inches and probably some dry snow. We got, for those out of state or who haven't heard, we've got, I think, out my door in Westminster, 6 inches of wet, like, slush. Slush is just terrible to be in.
I saw something that said this past February was the wettest month on record.
Jeez. I believe it.
And not in terms of like depth of snow, but in terms of moisture that fell from the sky. It was very, very wet, which is great. We need the moisture, as they say in Colorado. But let's go back to real estate due diligence. Yep. So in the city, you at least here in Boulder and other places, you can get these plow maps. But there's one more piece, and that is if you're buying in unincorporated locations, you should be aware that not every road gets plowed, but not every road gets graded. So you might be responsible, if you're buying in the mountains, for example, for grading the road. And that might be a completely voluntary process among the neighbors, or plowing the road. And so this is a really important due diligence item if you're buying in the mountains, is to understand how snow removal occurs and make sure you're comfortable with it. And I know, for example, my house is not going to have broad market appeal, because even though I think we have amazing views and tranquility, you need to participate in snow removal and you need to share the cost of grading. And the cost of grading is not outrageous. And the snow removal cost, once you've bought the plow truck, it's actually kind of fun to push snow around. But not everyone's down to go operate their own chained up plow truck to go plow 2.5 miles down to Four Mile Canyon.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal. And you wouldn't, your listing agent is not required to tell you all about this. And frankly, most buyer's agents are not competent enough and they're incentivized wrong to remind you of these things.
Especially when,
right? They want you to close.
And when the season peak to shop is in the summer, you're not thinking about snow. I mean, for the most part. You know, it's kind of not in the top of mind. So, yeah, I can't imagine not thinking of it, right. Buying a house and then finding yourself completely snowed in. That would be terrible.
Right. And every roadway, all these secondary roads that are canyons, like Sugarloaf and 4 Mile, Sunshine.
Does Magnolia fall in there?
They have icy. Magnolia is another secondary road. They have their icy spots. Because there are locations where the sun doesn't reach. And so you get these dark, and usually they're narrow too. So, you know, my wife and I jokingly called the spots in 4 Mile, we call it Frosty's Corner, because you know it's going to be ice laden. And unless you know in advance, you could swirl into that at full speed. And that's why there's a guardrail there. The guardrail is the other giveaway. Yeah. This could be an icy spot, but you could end up in the guardrail, in the ditch, off the side of a cliff. Who knows if you're not careful? So that's something to know buying in the mountains too.
Yeah. I'd say, I think we're at this point beating a dead horse, but just on the snow tire topic, there's ways to do it where it isn't extremely expensive. And it's a part of living. If you budget in for it, it's not terrible. And the peace of mind is well, well worth it. Especially the little dings and scrapes and everything that come from winter driving altogether, just having that extra control. It's peace of mind.
When I worked for the investment firm in Denver, I bought a used Audi 4000. It was blue. It had been repainted by Mako.
Oh, cool.
So every time I washed it, it would leave giant flakes of blue paint everywhere. And my ex at the time hated this car, but I remember paying only like 50. I needed a winter beater to get to the investment firm in Denver. Mm-hmm. And I understand it's a Quattro. It's Quattros old school Quattro. Solid, yeah. And the inline five was super reliable. And this vehicle had been previously owned by somebody who did maintenance for one of the mountain fire departments. And it came with a set of snow tires as well as regular tires.
Perfect.
And I think it was like not even $1,500. I think it was like $1,200. And I this car was like a rally car in the snow. It was so much more fun in the snow than on dry conditions. And I used to love to drive this thing. I had a garage spot in the building. I used to love to drive this thing and park it next to all the fancy BMWs and Mercedeses of my colleagues and park it a little too close. And the comments I would get about this POS in the garage... It always made me proud. So to your point, you don't have to spend a lot of money to get safety in the winter, but you should at least think about a plan.
And winter beaters are a thing here. Winter tires, winter wheels. You'll see some neighborhoods, some people's cars, suddenly they'll have different wheels on, and they have their snow tires on that to make it easier to swap out. All these things we do to get around it, and it works out. You just slow down, be smart, think ahead, yeah.
Don't go buying a Jeep or an Audi thinking, hey, I've got amazing traction because these vehicles are, you know, designed for that. They need snow tires. And now we are way off topic. Okay. We need to come back to real estate.
Circling back. But
Hamish and I like to talk about car stuff.
Yeah, we could go
it's
on.
It's going to be our second life is car stuff.
I threw that in thinking it might have been a little bit too off topic. And I'm glad we got there. But there's a few more points on this. So do you want to hit those?
I think we haven't talked about winter heating, mm-hmm. but we talked about everything else.
Yeah. You probably, I mean, you've been a property owner for a little bit longer, but I was just checking out my Excel bill. We had an Arctic freeze over January where it got into the single digits and then sub-zero for quite a while. And I heard a lot of talk from the commercial side that Excel had upped their rates a pretty ludicrous amount because of Arctic conditions. And then I went and checked out my bill, and I forget the acronym, but I had noticed that I'm paying an increased rate from Excel for my gas because of a winter storm that happened in 2021 February. And I can pull it up if you need a little bit more info. But
yeah, no, I understand a little bit about this because when I was an analyst, I attended a few conferences by utilities and. I understand a tiny fraction, okay? But rate increases need to be approved by the Public Utilities Commission. Mm. Because Excel has a monopoly, they have a partnership with, or they need regulatory approval for rate changes, and they need to show that they've had massive cost increases. And sometimes they do that retroactively for storms, and that has to be approved by the Public Utilities Commission. Mm-hmm. And I think the Public Utilities Commission is actually appointed. I don't understand all the mechanics of that. I don't need to. But that's how it works. But unfortunately, Xcel and other public utilities are incentivized to massively inflate costs because they get cost-plus pricing. So, sorry, you'll be paying for the storms of three years ago.
Yeah.
And at a very cushy rate, because they're not incentivized to save money when they do things. But that's a whole deeper topic when it comes to real estate. My biggest takeaways are don't assume anything with your tenants. Mm. And make sure you remind them to remove the hoses off the outside of the building so you don't have broken silcox. And make sure you tell them you cannot turn the heat off because you go on winter break from CU. The heat has to stay on. If you turn the heat off, you're going to create tens of thousands of dollars of damage. Your security deposit will not cover it, but you'll still be liable for it. So do not turn off your heat. And it's pretty rare you have to have these conversations, but being a property investor and dealing with college-age students, the mindset I've adopted is you are ushering them into adulthood. And that means helping them think about adult responsibilities.
And home ownership to an extent. Yeah.
That's true. To some extent, home ownership. And sometimes we have CU parents that want us to represent them too. And sometimes we have to do some parenting. I don't know what else to call it. Parenting. Yeah. That is not normally our forte. But that's what we have to do sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I think that's enough about cold weather. I think we're good. So let's move on to our last topic.
Okay.
Tales from the trenches. When your client is smarter than you are. And I want to start this with just deep appreciation for the quality of our clients at House Einstein. I feel like I appeal very much to engineers and doctors and finance people, scientists. We have so many clients that are scientists. They like the data. They like the lack of BS and happy talk. They want straight talk. And those are our people. And honestly, I think most of them are far smarter than I am. And I'm honored to work with them. But in real estate, taking your ego and dialing it down a bit is really important, especially early in the business. And I came into it thinking, I've lived in a house my whole life. I know so much about houses. And I've worked in the investment community. I know so much about investments. And then in the first year or second year in the business, we had this client who schooled me. I don't know how else to put it. Very successful individual. We're actually representing them again in the acquisition of a home here, potentially. We're working with them. We spent 3 years looking for a home to buy in Boulder. They rented during that time. He was very, very particular. And every house we went to, I learned something new. From knob and tube wiring to he was the first house that had EFIS that I sold. Hmm. Exterior insulation finishing system. On and on and on and on. I've learned about all sorts of aspects of residential real estate from him. And I deeply, deeply appreciate that. So the reason this is a tale from the trench is that it's very easy to choose somebody that you think has expertise but that doesn't on the basis of the brand of their brokerage, right? Because they're with a well-known brokerage, you assume that they know anything. They may not. But one thing is very, very true in that high performers, well-educated high performers, are usually not do-it-themselfers. And this comes from a study on self-made millionaires called The Millionaire Next Door. I read this book when I was in my 20s.
My math teacher recommended that to me.
Did you read it?
I haven't yet.
Okay.
Well, he gave me the spark
notes. Many takeaways. Bill Danko is one of the authors, and he was a professor at my MBA program, coincidentally. I did not know that when I read the book. And I just distinctly remember one of those takeaways, which was really successful, wealthy people that are self-made do not do it themselves, are not generally do-it-themselfers. And so as I've grown up in the world and become more successful, I always think about that. Like, does it make sense for me to hire somebody outside to go work on this, or should I do it? And if there's a learning component to it, it piques my interest, there's an additional value add for me to do it. Or if there's a hassle factor that just makes it faster, like I do my own snow tire changes, because by the time I drive it down a discount tire and bring it back up and move tires around, another 20 minutes and I could just do the swap, versus all that time and then uncertainty with quality control from the tire guys. Most of the time they're fine, by the way. Discount Tire has been great. I'm not throwing them under the bus. And Barnsley has been great. No issues. Well, Barnsley had one issue. They fixed it.
Okay.
Different story. They did fix it. They own their mistake. They fixed it. But so not ever. Life is not perfect. Your service provider might make mistakes and probably will on everything. The question is, do they learn from it? Are they willing to fix what they are? They willing to own it and fix it? So the biggest takeaway is working with people so much smarter than I am. There's so much opportunity to learn from these people. Our current clients, they've taught me a lot about floodplains. And when we chose the home they chose that we're probably going to be listing, well, I know we're listing, they were really particular about not being anywhere close to even to a 500-year flood. Wow. Because of the fact that floodplains are politically determined. They're not. It's not just low-lying engineering
studies.
It's not science,
yeah. Or 100%.
It is science, but it's influenced by politicians and local advocacy. And so as climate change accelerates and we have bigger and stronger storms, well, these areas that are labeled 500-year flood, that doesn't mean you've got a 1 in 500-year chance of having flood damage. And you're much more likely to be in a flood zone or actually have water damage from a flood event if you're in those zones, for sure, but it's not the statistics you think they are. So you may want to think twice about ownership in those locations. So every one of my clients, there's so much to learn. And I think that's really just sort of a general tale from the trench.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a happy story.
It is a happy story. We currently have a client who clearly is insanely, another C-suite client, insanely successful. And they've dabbled in real estate, and they are looking for a partner that can be a sounding board. And in meeting with this client, it's like, okay, you're clearly really intelligent and really successful.
From the get-go.
And I'm deeply honored to have an opportunity to work with you, and you know, take my ego down a notch or two. We're going to do our best. I think we do better than most of our colleagues, but I just appreciate the opportunity, and we're going to do everything we can to meet those goals. But it's just such an interesting experience working for people who are so successful in their own vertical, in their own career path. That's the biggest tale of the trenches. A surprise benefit of being in the real estate world.
Yeah, and it's great too. I mean, you've got, you're probably at like 25 years experience now. And so you have your vertical, and collaborating with these clients and everything is we're able to draw some fantastic parallels or have some great learning moments on either side. And it's just a privilege to be a part of this.
Well, I worked for investment firms before I got into real estate, and I was hired by a real estate company in 2003.
Here or Nantucket?
Nope, that was Nantucket, but not to be a realtor, to be an analyst. And I realized what an opportunity it is to provide analytical tools and framework and approach in the real estate world, because the vast majority of agents don't have that skill set that I have or that particular bent. And that's why the whole company is what it is. That's why we are, our mission is to help you be smart about your real estate decision, to help you make a smarter real estate decision.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's enough, Hamish. I think we should wrap up this podcast. What do you
say? I'm here with you. I agree.
Okay. Do you want to have a few closing thoughts, perhaps?
Yeah, I'm going to, let's try all this out. Well, we've covered a lot of things today. From market conditions, a fantastic property in Trailhead.
Trailhead neighborhood.
Some real estate news, some you might want to listen to and some you might want to vet a little bit further. And all this to help you make a smarter real estate decision. So thank you for tuning in. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe if you have anything to say to us. If not, just check in anyway. And we'll catch you on the next podcast next Friday. Alrighty.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening and watching our podcast.